Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
All right, we're checking in with Milford Mayor Ben Blake this morning. Good morning, Mayor Blake. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa.
Happy Wednesday. Yes, it's a Wednesday.
Happy summer. We're 2 days in officially.
I know. And I'm so excited, although I have to be honest with you, Mayor Blake, you're going to be mad at me. I knew you guys were doing your kickoff to summer this weekend. I knew the fireworks were happening. I'm going to be in Vermont, and I'm so mad. Like really, really mad. But I think the rest of the Shecks are literally going to come to Milford, just stay in my house to watch my dogs, and they're going to come to the event. So I'm happy for them. I'm not happy for me, but I'm happy for them.
Well, it should be quite a show with lots of illuminations from one side of the downtown to the other. Some great bands, including the Rum Runners, which our fire chief is a big part of.
Yeah, I think I saw a video on the Milford City's Facebook page. I saw you with an organizer as well as talking about the Rum Runners. I mean, they'll be back now. This is like the first time in a few years, right? Didn't they perform like 10 years ago or something in Milford? They were a big hit.
Oh, they are a big hit all the time. They are the fan favorite of the greater Milford area. And, you know, they perform at a lot of different local venues and draw a big crowd just because they're so good.
So let's talk about this weekend's event. It's happening Saturday. We know fireworks start at 9:15, but people can show up earlier to enjoy a lot of the festivities. What's going on?
So there's bands downtown over at Lisbon Landing Marina, and starting at 4 o'clock, and then the Rum Runners will go on at 7 o'clock, and it should be a great time. The weather should be good, and it's, again, a signal that everything is starting to open up, and there's a hopefulness in that.
Yeah, no question. And again, we're talking to Milford Mayor Ben Blake. So where can people go to best see the fireworks?
You know, downtown, just about everywhere should be pretty good. Over by Fowler Field, over by Lisbon Landing, really anywhere downtown. I know that the Elks Club on New Haven Ave is going to have an event. They're going to have bands as well. So there's a lot of different areas in the downtown to spread out and watch the fireworks.
Yeah, I'd say my personal favorite, if anyone were to ask me, you could take my spot this year, guys, if you want. I always grab Scooby-Doo's, and then I go over by the water. I find that to be although it's very packed down there, but that's kind of my go-to spot.
Yeah, Scooby-Doo's, Michelizzi's, Frosty Twist. There's some great ice cream places that you can grab a cone and watch the fireworks.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be a wonderful kickoff. And I love the fact, too, Mayor Ben Blake, that you guys do the fireworks ahead of 4th of July weekend, because it kind of is, like you said, it's a little separate than Independence Day weekend. It's something that sort of kicks off for the summertime. It sort of sets you guys apart. There's no other conflicting towns or cities doing something this weekend. I think it's very cool that you guys do this, and especially coming off of last year where we didn't have them. So I think that's very, very exciting.
Absolutely. Yeah, these are the city-sponsored fireworks, again, to kick off the summer. But on the 4th of July, you know, there are private displays that light up each beach. Everybody says that their particular beach in Milford across the 70.5 miles of coastline is the best, and everybody's right. They're all that good.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, we're talking to Mayor Ben Blake this morning, the city of Milford. Now, Mayor Blake, yesterday, whether people liked it or not, Connecticut became the 19th state in the country to legalize marijuana. And it is history here in Connecticut. But again, whether people like it or not, it's happening. A week from tomorrow, people will be able to walk around freely with up to an ounce and a half of weed on them, essentially. Now, I saw in the law that it basically is saying any town or city that has 50,000 or more residents has to at least designate an area, at least one area publicly, that allows people to smoke freely. Have you guys been talking about that in Milford? What does that kind of look like?
You know, so as you mentioned, this is a controversial law. It's hot off the presses, just got adopted recently. Some of the provisions of this law, like you just mentioned, go into effect July 1st, but others don't go into effect until 2022. So our public safety officials, our police, our health department, they are convening, and they will continue to convene to kind of dissect the elements of the laws and how they impact us here in Milford, and the municipalities across the state, I'm sure, will be doing a similar, having similar exercises to see how, we need to respond.
But at this point, Mayor Blake, we don't know where those designated areas are going to be.
Not as of yet. Again, we're only a day or so into this law, so.
No, absolutely.
None of the provisions have gone into effect as of yet.
Right. And the other thing, too, Mayor Blake, that I think we need to touch on, and I'm not sure if you're able to weigh in on this, but I think when people hear about, like, smoking, designated smoking areas, cigarette smoking, people immediately, especially if they support the law, they feel like, why can't we just make that also? Why can't we just use those designated areas for pot? But I'm not sure if it's seen the same. I'm not sure if you're able to kind of weigh in on it. Could you kind of just, I guess, mention why it's not as simple as just saying, yep, we're just going to adopt cannabis like we do cigarette designated areas? Like, it's not as simple as that. I would think it's more complicated.
It is. There's, different effects for cannabis versus tobacco-based products. I can tell you that one of the moves that our recreation department has done within the last 10 years is they have restricted any type of smoking, any type of tobacco or smoke, or other types of smoking from our beaches, our parks, our recreational facilities and areas. So this is one more adjustment that will need to be made to some of the recreation policies.
I was going to say, Mayor Blake, just because of having a young family myself, I was wondering what the policies were going to probably be for, like, the beaches. You guys are a big beach town, huge. I mean, that's one of the biggest reasons we love living in Milford, and I was curious if that was going to sneak into the beach areas, but it doesn't sound like it will.
The longest coastline in Connecticut, we do have terrific beaches. It's probably our best resource, Long Island Sound, other than the people of Milford.
There you go. Well, Mayor Ben Blake, we appreciate you coming on this morning. Thank you so much. Enjoy the fireworks, and we'll talk again in a couple of weeks.
Take care. Bye-bye.
And joining us on the show for the first time is the new acting fire chief in Bridgeport, Lance Edwards. Welcome to the show, Lance. How are you?
Very good. How are you, Melissa?
I'm good. I was telling our listeners earlier in the show that you and I have crossed paths before in my News 12 days, but I really got to know you a couple years ago when Bill Jackman and I came to that emergency management meeting before the winter. And I was so excited when I saw your name pop up as the new acting fire chief. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And I remember our encounter.
I'm glad to hear that. Good. So first of all, I mean, were you shocked by this? Did you see this coming? What were your initial thoughts when you were given this announcement?
Well, I started my career 5 years ago as a deputy chief, which is number two in charge of the Bridgeport Fire Department. So anytime Chief Thode either took a day off, went on vacation, was away on business, I was put in charge of the department. So it's not new to me, and I understood at some point Chief Thode would have aspirations to move on. He spent 33 decorated years in the Bridgeport Fire Department, and so I was not shocked to find out that I was appointed acting chief of the department. But let me say, Melissa, I'm very thankful to Mayor Ganim, the CAO and the chief of staff, for giving me this opportunity. It's a pleasure, and I'm honored to be the chief of the Bridgeport Fire Department.
So I know I'm probably getting ahead of myself here, Lance, but I do have to ask the question. Whenever you hear acting anything, acting commissioner, acting chief, acting anything, there's always the question, at least in my reporter mind, are you going to take it full time or is this just temporary? So is it too soon for me to ask you if you are hoping to be full time chief, or is this just something temporary until they find someone because you don't want to take that job on full time?
No, Melissa, it is not too soon. I plan on attempting to make this a permanent position.
Yay. Okay, great. Good. I'm glad. No, I think, you know, the one thing I was saying, again, we're talking to the acting fire chief in Bridgeport, Lance Edwards, this morning. And, you know, when you look at your resume, Lance, it's hard to kind of overlook the fact that you have been an active firefighter since the 1980s. I know when I first met you, it was so clear how dedicated you were to your work in the fire department and also the city of Bridgeport. So I'm excited for you. I'm curious, what do you want to bring to the fire department? Where do you think things have gone very well, and in other areas maybe we're lacking a little bit?
Well, I'm very fortunate because Chief Tho left the department in a very good space right now. But what I plan on bringing to the department is someone who's fair, professional at all times, someone who's very supportive of the men and women of the Bridgeport Fire Department, and also vision. I think it's important for you to have vision of where we need to go. Because as we know with technology, things change very quick. And above all, just making sure that we continue to keep our members safe under my command. I think that's extremely important to make sure everyone goes home at the end of their shift.
Could you tell us at this point, Lance Edwards, where are we at with recruitment? Like, how are fire departments doing with recruitment in general and then specifically in Bridgeport? I know for police, it's very challenging right now for them to not only recruit, but to recruit good officers. Do we find the same thing in fire departments and specifically in Bridgeport, or are we doing okay in that regard?
Right now, we actually have an active hiring list, so we're good there, but that list expires August of this year. So we're going to be starting a huge recruitment push a few months after August, probably the end of this year, to hopefully get an entry-level test going sometime around spring of 22. So right now, we do have an active hiring list, but there's going to be a huge recruitment push in a few months to spread the word how important it is to get members of the community interested in becoming a firefighter, especially men and women of color from the city of Bridgeport.
That was going to be my second question, was how important is it to have diversity representing the fire department?
It's extremely important. Actually, right now, 50% of the department is made up of minorities between Hispanics and African-Americans, which is a great feat. But we want to make sure that we continue to keep the numbers where they are. And we've been successful in the past, and I don't see any reason why we wouldn't continue to be successful. I know I was part of the recruitment drive a few years ago, and it's a lot of hard work, but worth all the effort that we put into it.
We're talking this morning to Acting Fire Chief Lance Edwards for the Bridgeport Fire Department. A very exciting announcement this week, which was that Lance Edwards was going to take this position. As you all know, Chief Richard Thode, while he did a great job, he decided to take a job as the new fire chief in Danbury. And we knew that sometime this month he was going to be stepping down and someone was going to be stepping into that role. And it is Lance Edwards who's here this morning. Now, Lance, I know in talking about recruitment numbers, any idea? You know, when you say that it's going to expire, and that we're going to have to do a push next year, on average, ballpark, you don't have to give me exact numbers, you know, how many firefighters mm-hmm. would you say you guys would be looking for?
I will say this. Over Chief Tho's 5 years, he hired 100. So he basically hired a third of the department. We basically still have about 80 to 100 members that can retire. So we would expect, I would assume, probably 50 to 75 people hired, and it could be more because you just never know.
Mm-hmm. Did you find after what happened last month in New Haven, the passing of Rico Torres Jr., we see Samad Rankin still recovering weeks later. Did you find that rocked your department and could impact people wanting to become a firefighter? Or have we seen, unfortunately, things like this happen before that it doesn't necessarily push people away from being a firefighter, but in fact makes them want to serve even more? Does that make sense?
It does. I hope it makes them want to serve even more because it shows the importance of being able and being there to help people in their direst need. I know our department, we took it hard because we had a line of duty death that occurred a few years ago when we lost two members at a residential structure fire, because a lot of people think we lose firefighters at these large, horrific fires, and that's not the case usually. They're in residential homes, so we still discuss it. We still talk about it. We have open dialogue and communication with the New Haven Fire Department and Chief Alston. We've sent up peer support members to assist with their fire department who are grieving. So, and it's not just a local thing. This is a national thing. So when we lose firefighters, it's felt across the country, not just within that particular state.
All right. Well, we are so happy that we got to have you on the air this morning. Acting Fire Chief Lance Edwards, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations again. And looking forward to chatting with you soon.
And Melissa, could I say one thing before we end this conversation?
Of course, Acting Chief. Go for it.
One thing I want to announce. That July 6th, we're going to be restarting our very successful smoke alarm program. Unfortunately, because of COVID, we had to put that on hiatus. But we had a rash of fires a few weeks ago. Some of them actually went to a second alarm. So I'm happy to announce July 6th, we'll be restarting that very successful program.
First of all, let's just talk about smoke detectors, the importance of them, because I think the unfortunate news, at least in my background of telling stories, I can't tell you how many times, Lance, I hear about stories where this could have been prevented, but there were no working smoke detectors.
Yeah, that's correct, Melissa. Most working fires that we respond to, it's sad to say, even in this day of 2021, the home did not have working smoke detectors in the home. And most fires and most lives could be prevented. But by everything is about early detection, whether it's in the medical field or in the fire service. So a working smoke detector would certainly certainly cut back on property loss and the loss of life. And we're still experiencing that today in 2021. But as I mentioned before, I'm happy to announce we're restarting that program, and that will take place July 6th. So we expect the phones to ring off the hook because we've actually put that program on hiatus for about a year now. And we have a huge backlog, but we have a huge inventory of smoke alarms. So we have a truck dedicated 7 days a week to go out, and we actually installed the smoke alarms. So I don't want you to think we actually hand them out. We actually install them for the residents.
So for Bridgeport residents, all they do is call you guys or email you, and you guys will show up to their house, and you'll install the smoke detectors in their house?
That is it. We work around the residents' schedule because we know most people are busy. They work, and they have different things going on. So the telephone number for this program is 203-335-8835. And we install smoke alarms in 1 and 2 family homes and owner-occupied 3-family homes. So we work around the resident schedule.
And my understanding, Lance Edwards, the new acting fire chief in Bridgeport, my understanding is this program's been around since 2005, I believe.
That is correct.
Right. Okay. So how many smoke alarms would you say you guys have distributed, or how do you even do that? How do you, you just said you have a backlog from the last year. Where do you guys get the resources to have smoke alarms for so many residents, and how many would you say on average you guys are serving?
Right now we're up around 80,000 smoke alarms that have been installed since the inception of the program. The actual program itself is funded through FEMA grants and CDBG, so we're very fortunate to have been awarded probably a little under $6 million in federal funding and local funding in the last 5 years. So we work very hard to look for alternative funding opposed to going to Common Council looking to fund certain projects. We look for alternative funding sources as best as we can.
That's incredible. Now, what if you're a household that has 4 bedrooms, a kitchen, and a downstairs area? So like in our house, we've got a detector in each of the bedrooms. We've got one in the kitchen area, one in the hallway, and then one in the downstairs living room. So like our house would need 6 detectors. Is that okay? Or do you guys only give 1 detector per home?
No. We have guidelines that we follow. Obviously, if you can only have one, and for those who decide not to call us, one is better than nothing. Mm-hmm. But we would certainly, based on the amount of bedrooms that you have, we would install more than one. And also, what we've been doing is introducing carbon monoxide detectors along with the smoke alarm detectors. So we have dual detectors that we install also, because as many people know, especially during the winter, carbon monoxide is that colorless, odorless gas that also takes about 500 lives a year.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So again, if you want to get in on the free smoke alarm for Bridgeport residents program, that is going to be kicking back off in July. July 6th, they're going to be going out 7 days a week. They're going to be delivering and actually installing those alarms, those detectors in your homes. The number is 203-335-8835. And again, thank you so much for taking the time to come on this morning, Acting Fire Chief Lance Edwards of the City of Bridgeport. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem, Melissa. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, too. We will definitely talk again really soon.
Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio is on the Lissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Well, good morning, Dan Onofrio. We heard the big announcement out of Hartford HealthCare's amphitheater yesterday. It's pretty exciting stuff for Bridgeport.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, I mean, I'm so psyched, but I'm bummed at the same time. I'm not going to be in town for the REO Speedwagon and Styx show.
Oh, really?
That is my genre of music. I love it. And I'm going to be out of town that whole week. I'm so disappointed.
Oh, what a bummer. Well, hopefully they come back again really soon. I'm sure they will. I actually think we're out of town as well. I don't think we're going to be able to make it either. I saw it was at the end of July. So I hear you. We'll be on the same sad boat together, wishing we were there.
That's right. That's right.
But I do know a lot of people are going to be able to take advantage of, if not this concert, many that are coming that way. And, you know, you and I have talked about this a little bit in the past before, and I wanted to kind of dive back into it and see what Bridgeport is doing to really capitalize on the Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater. What can you tell listeners this morning about surrounding businesses and even just other entertainment options like the Beardsley Zoo or maybe some of the splash pads or parks? Like, what is Bridgeport doing to really benefit from the amphitheater?
Yeah, so there is definitely a lot of conversation happening with community groups, our organization, the Downtown Special Services District, the City of Bridgeport, of course, and in the police department. There, you know, obviously, there's a ripple effect, right? When you've got thousands of people coming into your city, you know, we need to do what we can to make that experience the best experience possible for these individuals, especially those that are just not familiar with Bridgeport outside of, you know, the arena or the amphitheater. So certainly the business community wants to engage with the city and with the folks at the amphitheater to make sure that we have that ripple effect into downtown, into the surrounding city. So that businesses can take advantage of, you know, marketing and getting people into their facilities like the zoo and you know, other restaurants and stuff like that. That said, you know, I will say that it is imperative, and I mentioned this, I think, a few weeks ago when we spoke about it. You know, we need this first impression to be really good, mm-hmm. right? Because otherwise we're just going to miss the opportunity, you know, whether it's their first show on the 28th with REO Speedwagon or if they're coming later in the summer with one of the other shows. You know, we just need to make sure we have our A game so that people that are coming into the city, you know, are getting a great first impression and feel safe. You know, there's a perception out there that Bridgeport's not safe. And while I'll argue all day long that's not true, you know, that's just the perception. So we just need to show it when people come into town. And there's a variety of ways that we're trying to make that happen.
We're talking this morning to Dan Onofrio, the president of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, and we're talking about the big news out of the Hartford Healthcare Amphitheater. We know that the first show is coming near the end of July, and two pretty big headliners that we're talking about here. And you know, we're talking about how can we benefit from this? How do we put Bridgeport? I mean, it's already been on the map, Dan, but this is such an amazing opportunity. You know, when you think about what the amphitheater is bringing, this is something where people would usually either go into Manhattan to go see a concert of some sorts, or they're going to go up to the casinos in upstate Connecticut. And we're bringing this opportunity here. So could you maybe just talk about how can even out of staters or even just here in Connecticut, we have plenty of people who listen to the show who don't even live in Fairfield County. How do they find out when they're coming to the amphitheater, where are the best places to eat? You know, who's offering what? Where can I stay for a hotel? Like, are those resources found somewhere so that people can know before they go?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, so right now, probably the best resource is the infobridgeport.com. I think the Downtown Special Services District has a really nice page, infobridgeport.com, that really speaks to the heartbeat of Bridgeport, which I've always said is the downtown community. So I think that's a great resource. I expect DSSD to continue to evolve that. And that'll be a good first point, landing point for people that are exploring Bridgeport. And then, of course, you know, organizations like ours and others that, you know, feed into that and link through the Info Bridgeport. But I like the fact that Info Bridgeport has kind of this downtown as its core message, and then, you know, the other communities kind of feed off of that. That's probably the best resource right now. And of course, you know, we get calls all the time from Long Island, you know, folks coming from Long Island, you know, coming into the marina there in the Bridgeport Harbor, like, oh, you know, where can we go for dinner? You know, so of course our office is always a great resource, you know, to tell people, you know, what to experience over a weekend or a day or whatever it is that they're coming in for.
That is excellent. Talking to Dan Onofrio this morning of the Bridgeport Regional Business Council. Now, Dan, are we still having conversations about the boatload of money that Bridgeport is specifically getting from the American Rescue Plan? And if those conversations are still happening, where are we at as far as segmenting that money into the correct places, whether it's for businesses or individuals in Bridgeport?
Yeah. So those conversations are certainly still happening. They had a public hearing, I want to say, at the beginning of last week. I do expect some more conversation to occur related to that. And, you know, our position outside of, you know, direct support to smaller businesses and minority-owned businesses, you know, I do think it's an opportunity for us to leverage some of those dollars in this conversation that we're having now with presenting Bridgeport in the best light. I think we have an opportunity here to perhaps use some of those dollars to spark some additional economic development, feeding off of the amphitheater experience and people coming into town. So I expect, I expect some stuff to happen outside of the three buckets that they've talked about, the infrastructure and technology and those kind of things. I do expect some dollars earmarked in going towards the business community. I don't know what shape it'll take right now. It's a little too early to tell, but I do expect those conversations to continue. We're at the center of them, along with some of our other partners in the community. And we're hopeful that we can learn too from some of the other cities, like Hartford put together some proposals recently. So we want to learn from them and make sure that we're taking advantage of this really once in a lifetime opportunity with these dollars coming into the city.
Dan Onofrio, always appreciate having you on the show every week. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Melissa. Have a great week.
Thank you. You too. Beginning August of 2022, Norwalk will become the home to a two-year performing arts college with plans to expand to a four-year degree program at some point. And earlier this year, actually, Broadway performers Danny and Ricky Loftus-George moved to Norwalk with their eight-month-old son, Aspen, with the hopes to kind of strengthen the art community in the city more than it is right now. And joining me this morning, I have the honor of having Danny George on the show, the co-president of the Norwalk Conservatory of the Arts. Thank you so much for being here, Danny. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So first of all, Danny, talk about your vision. Why did you guys decide to come to Norwalk and really bring the arts in a bigger element to the city? Why was that your choice?
Yeah, absolutely. So my husband and I moved to Connecticut a couple of years ago from London. We were first living in Stamford, and then we moved to Norwalk when we had our son, who's about 8 months old now. We were trying to find the perfect location outside of New York City for a college conservatory. You know, with COVID, things were just so crazy in New York. We knew we wanted somewhere that was close proximity so that we could have, you know, an unbelievable faculty and access, you know, to a Broadway, having it in your backyard where you go to school is the most ideal thing, but we wanted a suburban campus, and Norwalk really stood out to us.
So let's talk about the current conservatory now kind of becoming a college. What happens to, like, current, I don't know if you'd call it current enrollment, like what happens to the current programs if it now transforms into this new vision?
Yeah, so we actually started a company called The Growing Studio. It's all postgraduate education. So Ricky and I, we've been performers, you know, our whole lives. It's been our career. I never, ever thought I'd even dive into, you know, education, let alone higher education. I wanted to dance on Broadway till my feet stopped moving. but that wasn't in the cards for us. You know, I was doing a show called Sister Act. My producer was Whoopi Goldberg, and my director was a man named Jerry Zaks.
No big deal.
Got four, yeah, you know, he's a multiple Tony Award-winning director. He's so brilliant. And I was dance captaining the show and swinging the show, and I was 23 years old. And that basically means you have to tell people where to stand. And I had people that had, you know, 9 Broadway shows, and I was, you know, this young kid telling them where to go on stage.
Wow.
And I quickly learned that, you know, I really didn't want to swing, and I didn't want to be a dance captain. I really wanted to play lead roles. Mm-hmm. That's what I always wanted to do. So I talked to Jerry. You know, I was trying to figure out how I can move out of the ensemble, and it kept being suggested to me that I should take more classes. So I started taking classes, around New York City, and nothing really fit. It was too expensive, or they were the wrong instructor. So I asked some people if they would teach a class that were really high profile. They said yes, including Jerry. And I got to take the class for free.
Wow.
That was great.
Wow.
Yeah. And I realized that after watching Jerry work with other actors and watching all these other creatives work with other actors, that I loved what I was doing. And it made sense. So we kept offering more content. It was pretty, you know, much for the Broadway community. We'd have people who were, you know, in Wicked for a few years and wanted to, you know, move into Hamilton, and they wanted notes and feedback, but they haven't gotten it because they haven't been in an audition in so long. So we were catering, you know, towards the Broadway community. And then we started getting kids, you know, who had graduated from colleges coming to us right after school, which in turn led me to, you know, open dialogues with colleges. Fast forward about 5-6 years, we now have 6,000 students in New York City. We're also in London and in Amsterdam. And I produce showcases, I hire professors, and I rewrite curriculums for about 42 different colleges, theater programs across the country. And so, yeah, it's a little crazy.
Yeah, you're a little busy with an 8-month-old, but that's okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, about 3 years ago, we started a program where we would bring in college students, you know, really as part of NOCO, when we knew we wanted to build a conservatory, to try to get our curriculum spot on and right. And they would enroll in a program. We would shift curriculum each year to see what worked best. And we now have something that I think is a winner. So, you know, we will continue on with TGS, but our main focus now, obviously, is this college conservatory in Norwalk.
So we're talking to Danny George this morning. You all probably are very familiar. We have a very eclectic, I would say, listenership here, Danny. A lot of people very much into the arts love Broadway. They absolutely do. In fact, the host who comes on after me, Lisa Wexler, she loves New York. She's in there constantly going to check out Broadway. Like, she was counting the days for Broadway to come back.
So, <too. laughs>
yeah. So I think a lot of people are probably very starstruck that you're even on the show this morning, and I appreciate it. Danny is also the co-president of the Norwalk Conservatory of Arts, and in a recent announcement that come next summer, there's going to be a conservatory college. So when are you guys going to start accepting applications? How many students can be enrolled? All of that good stuff.
Yeah, so we open applications August 1st. We start auditioning for the program really January 1st, and then College Decision Day is May 1st. So we should have a completed class by then. For year one, we're going for 75 students is our goal, with plans, obviously, to expand that in future years into the hundreds and potentially thousands.
That's incredible. So for this first starting off, you know, it's probably a huge privilege. I would think that you're going to get a lot of applicants in, but it seems like it's going to be very challenging. You've got maybe 75 slots that you could fill. So that's going to be quite, you guys, I'm sure, are going to have a lot of work again on your hands to kind of figure out how do you narrow that down, because there's a lot of interest, I would think, in this industry.
Oh, it's just so hard. You know, every step of this career is very difficult. You know, it's an old adage that I think people are aware of, but it is incredibly difficult. And being able to select, you know, 75, that's amongst 3 majors. You know, so some majors have 15 students we can accept for musical theater performance. That's a really tiny class. And we see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of students. And we're really looking for those students that we believe can have a serious career and a serious future in the art form.
So back in 2018, Danny and Ricky Loftus George decided to open up the Norwalk Conservatory of the Arts. They started by offering theater classes to colleges and then had the plan to evolve it into an arts college itself. And now that vision is coming to life in August of 2022. And joining me is Danny George back on the show this morning. We're very excited to talk about the college now. My understanding from you, Danny, is that you're going to start taking applications, you said, August 1st of, is it next year probably, that you guys are going to start taking applications?
It's actually August 1st of this year.
Okay, so you're going to accept applications for the next year. Then you're going to start doing auditions, you said, in January of 2023?
Of 2022.
Okay, so I'm following you now. So you're going to have it all ready to go in 2022. So you're doing all the application process, all of the auditions and everything in this upcoming year leading up to it.
That's right.
Okay, perfect. So what does this two-year program look like? For people who do get into the program, what does it look like for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really a condensed four-year program into 2 years. So it is incredibly rigorous. You know, the arts is rigorous by nature. You have to train incredibly hard. So there are three majors. There's television film performance, there's musical theater performance, and there's musical theater dance performance. And all three are really, you know, geared towards career longevity and very specific career path. So television film obviously speaks for itself. Musical theater performance is really geared towards those who want to lead musicals and play principal roles. And musical theater dance performance is geared towards those who want to cover principal roles and be in the ensemble, as well as dance, you know, in television and commercials. It's far more of a commercial program than, let's say, a dance company. So there are three majors. All of our faculty are coming in from New York City. Now, we will be hiring some Connecticut locals, but we're really known for our New York City Broadway faculty, who include massive directors and choreographers like Des McAnuff and Susan Stroman, Kathleen Marshall, you name it. They are probably either a guest artist or on our faculty at the conservatory.
That's incredible. What an opportunity for people who want to get into this industry. Now, are you specifically looking for students who are fresh out of high school? Or, you know, does it matter if you, let's just say you've been out of school, you've been going on auditions. The reason I know this is because my sister is a ballroom dancer. So say, you know, you've been out of school, you've been doing auditions for 5, 6, 7 years, and you decide, you know what, maybe kind of like the direction you got, maybe I need to go back to school. Are you taking those applications, or is this strictly for like a younger audience?
Yeah, so we actually have a one-year condensed master's program. The two-year program is really for an undergraduate audience. You know, we are looking for students that have just graduated high school that are looking for a college program that will get them into the industry quickly. You know, our ideal student is someone who is ready to work on Broadway, who is really at that point in their career or in their skill. In terms of the one-year program, we have a lot of students that will be joining us that have already graduated other universities. So there is a one-year condensed, and that's really the program that I'd recommend to people who have been working in the field.
That's so cool. So I guess the last question, Danny, is where can people, if they are listening and they know someone who is just feeling like maybe this is a perfect fit for them? We know it's going to be very challenging. They're going to be in a pool with many, many other applicants, but they're interested. They're hungry for this. Where can they go to apply?
Yeah, so they should go to the norwalkconservatory.org. Applications will be available starting August 1st, but there's a ton of information there if they want to check it out. We're also doing a massive concert series in Matthews Park this summer, where we're bringing a bunch of Broadway actors to the park to sing Disney classics. And all the information for that is on the website as well. But it'll give students in the area a really strong idea of the type of student that we're looking to train and the level that we're looking for.
Well, Danny, you didn't know this about me, but I am a Disney fanatic. Like, I'm a freak about it. So that just sounds
I better see you there then.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to figure that out. I'm probably have to be there. So that sounds
pretty cool. It's every Sunday. It's free for little children. I think it's $15 for adults. It's in Matthews Park, and every week features different Broadway Disney shows and different Broadway stars coming out. So it's Little Mermaid and Frozen and, Moana, you name it. We're probably singing tunes from it.
Wow. All right. Well, that's right up my alley. I am marking my calendar, and now my husband won't see me for a solid 2 months because I'll be taking my toddler there, and we'll be living in the park. So, Danny George, a pleasure.
I love that.
Thank you so much for coming on this morning. I hope to have you back on the show really soon. You were great.
Thank you. I so appreciate it. Take care.
All right.